Chapter 6. Meyer and I sat down opposite of David and Jesse Miller in their living room. The couple sat together on the couch, while Travis and I sat in a pair of armchairs. There were a few toys scattered around here and there still, but I imagined the kids were hard to keep up with here at the tail end of their summer vacation.
"I'm sure you'll have to leave for work soon, Mr. Miller," Meyer said as he noted the other man's work polo. "So I'll be direct. I have here some papers outlining Mr. Hill's offer for $275,000, and to cover all closing costs, non-essential repairs, or appraisal fees that the state might require as part of the sale of the real estate. Mr. Hill is also able to offer you the payment right away, without having to wait for a bank to approve or prepare a loan."
"Do we have to accept it right now?"
Jesse asked after a pause. "No." I shook my head and smiled at the sweet-faced woman. "But this is my last offer. It's your house, and if I were in your place, I'd want to get the best value out of it. But honestly, that's what I feel I'm offering you today. I know Brock has made an offer, and if you want to hear what he has to say first, I'll understand that." David and Jesse looked at each other, and it was the first time I'd really seen them interact as a couple.
"What do you think?"
Jesse said as she cocked her head to one side.
"There was that one place in Elyria we really liked, and this little fuck you to Brock would be the perfect parting gift for leaving Westhurst."
"I do hate Brock."
David nodded his head thoughtfully as he stared into space, as if he were imagining the look on Stanton's face when he found out they'd sold the house to me.
"And with the money, we could put a huge down payment on the new house,"
the plump housewife said as she gave me a conspiratorial wink. I smiled at Jessie. The mother of three was talking her husband into taking my offer.
"Ball's in your court, David,"
I added, as I leaned forward and looked at the middle-aged man. David looked at me, and his round face was set in a look of determination.
"You know what, Eddie? I'll take you up on that offer,"
Miller said in a clear voice.
"Excellent,"
Meyer interjected as he leaned forward and laid the contract on the coffee table between the chairs and the couch.
"Feel free to read it over before you sign, and I'll be happy to answer any questions you have."
The lawyer pulled a very nice charcoal gray and gold fountain pen out of his breast pocket, removed the cap, and set it on top of the contract. David and Jesse read over everything, with Travis patiently explaining any of the legal language they needed cleared up, and within half an hour, everything was signed by the Millers and myself. And then that was it. Once we went through escrow, the house would be mine, and I'd be able to move the ladies in, let Ipsith pick out furniture, the whole nine yards. As David and I shook hands, I felt like the king my elven wife saw me as, and it felt fucking great. There wouldn't be any more worrying about Brock coming in and making another offer behind my back, and this was the first step in realizing my dream of owning this whole cul-de-sac one day. Meyer and I said goodbye to the Millers and walked back over to the trailer where the CPA's Audi was parked.
"I'll make sure to process the money once I get back to the office,"
Travis said, and he adjusted his yellow tie.
"The sooner they have the money, the sooner they'll be able to make an offer on another property and move."
"Thanks for coming all the way out here, Meyer," I nodded as I looked over at the three-bedroom home. "I think having you here really helped them realize I was serious. It sealed the deal."
"Glad I could help."
The man in the blue suit smiled as he walked over to his car and opened the driver's side door.
"I wouldn't be surprised if this Stanton character finds another way to retaliate. I'm just a phone call away if you need any legal advice should that happen."
"You're the best, Meyer," I grinned as I watched the well-groomed man unbutton the bottom button of his suit jacket and slide into the driver's seat.
"Yes, I am,"
Travis replied without a hint of bragging before he closed the door. I watched the Audi pull out of the cul-de-sac and then turned back to look at the old trailer. I considered what to do with it. Once I was able to move into my new home, I could tear it down and build an actual house there. But that idea didn't sit right with me. The trailer was where this journey had all begun. It was like a shrine to all I'd accomplished, and everything I would accomplish. But I could keep fixing it up, do a little landscaping in the front, put a real porch on the back, maybe even have the thing raised and put onto a foundation, instead of just sitting on the supports it was on now, which were hidden behind aluminum skirting around the bottom of the trailer. I grinned as I thought about really leaning into the 1970s aesthetic of my grandpa's old place, since the ladies would be able to decorate the house to their liking. I would just make it a nicer version of what was in there now. I wondered how hard it would be to find new, rust orange and gold shag carpeting to replace the horribly matted stuff currently on the floor of the trailer. I walked back into the trailer as I rearranged my list of things to do in my head and prioritized the things I felt were most important. Ibsith was busy vacuuming, but she blew me a kiss as I carefully stepped past her. I smiled and pretended to catch the kiss as I looked for where Amrila was. We needed to start preparing for our next trip into the gloom. This venture was probably going to be longer than our previous trips had been, and I wanted to be sure we were ready, and that Ibsith would have everything she needed until we got back. I found Amrila in her room checking over her leather armor, and the two of us set to work gathering all the things we would need. Ibsith also helped us by getting some non-perishable food together and filling our canteens. We checked our weapons, gathered ammo, and put together the gifts I'd gotten for various friends we'd made in the underground world. I packed the spare pair of Pro-X headphones and extra bullets for Nylame, and made sure I had the silicon earplugs as well. Then I started fitting the new laser flashlight onto the rail of the Galil. As I was putting the tools away and about to take the rifle into the backyard to double-check the red dot and the laser for any adjustments that might be needed, there was a loud knock on the trailer door. I looked up from what I was doing and paused for a moment. Some knocks just had an official sound to them, and this was one of them.
"Baby,"
I hissed at Ibsith, "take this and put it back into the bedroom closet." The Galil wasn't loaded, since I'd been working on it, but my elven wife took it carefully and was mindful not to put her finger near the trigger all the same. It was probably the police following up on the incident the night before, and I frowned as I looked around at the mess on the living room floor from all the preparations. I wished I could have cleared it up real quick, but really, it just looked like we might be getting ready for a camping trip. Amrila had also gotten the hint from me asking the blue-skinned woman to put the gun away and took her swords back to her bedroom, and after I double-checked there wasn't anything else laying out that would raise uncomfortable questions, I answered the door. As I opened the trailer's front door, I saw a short, older woman in a mid-length tweed skirt and a boxy blazer standing on the front porch. Her graying hair was pulled back in a neat bun, and I thought the lady looked more like a social worker than a cop. "Hello," I said in a friendly tone. "How may I help you, ma'am?"
"My name is Grace Yoder,"
the older woman said as she craned her neck to look up at me.
"I'm a special agent with Immigration and Customs Enforcement."
"Oh, I'm Eddie Hill," I said and tried to look surprised. "What's this about?" "Fucking Brock."
"There's been a complaint filed that there are two women living here who might have come into the country illegally, Mr. Hill,"
Agent Yoder said in a clipped tone.
"I'm here to ask a few questions. Are you the owner of this property?"
The agent had a no-nonsense manner and tone that matched her neatly pulled back hair and sensible flat loafers, and I watched as she pulled out a badge and held it up for me to see. There was a very official-looking government seal on it, as well as an unsmiling picture of Agent Yoder. "Yeah," I replied as I moved aside and invited the immigration officer in. "Please excuse the mess."
"Are you planning a trip, Mr. Hill?"
the stern woman asked as I led her to the armchair and offered her a seat. "Thought we'd go camping," I nodded. Ibsith came into the living room then, with a sweet smile on her face.
"Who is our guest, my love?"
she asked and fluttered her wide violet eyes. "This is Agent Yoder," I replied, and I tried to convey with just my eyes for my wife to be careful with what she said. "She's with immigration and has some questions for us."
"Oh,"
the elven woman said in an unfazed tone.
"Would you care for some coffee, Agent Yoder?"
I turned to look at the small, older woman, and the expression on her face as she took in Ibsith was priceless. The agent's lips had pursed themselves into a thin, white line, and she looked the blue-skinned woman up and down. Agent Yoder took in my wife's short sundress, her pointed ears, and long white hair with wide, scandalized eyes, and I was struggling not to laugh. Just wait until she saw Amrila.
"Yes,"
the short agent said in an almost breathless voice.
"That would be nice."
Ibsith went to get the coffee, and I turned back to the immigration officer. "What were your questions, ma'am?" I asked politely as I sat down on the couch across from the short woman in tweed.
"I guess we can start with how many people are living here?"
the agent asked as her eyes followed Ibsith, and it was obvious she was unable to take her eyes off of my wife's extraordinary appearance. "Well, there's my wife and I said as I tried to keep my tone casual, "and our friend Amrila lives with us." Ipsith handed Agent Yoder a cup of steaming coffee, and then she came and sat next to me on the couch. The stern woman had started to recover from the initial shock of seeing the Alvin woman and took a sip of the coffee.
"And this is your wife, Mr. Hill?"
she asked as she pulled out a pen and pad of paper from her purse. "Yes." I smiled at the white-haired woman, who grinned back up at me. "We're newlyweds."
"Congratulations,"
Agent Yoder replied in a dry tone.
"And where are you from, Mrs. Hill?"
My stomach turned. We had talked over some of the answers for the questions that would come up in the scenario, since Brock threatened to call immigration 2 or 3 times a week. Even though he usually played it off as a joke, I was just quietly praying Ipsith remembered it all.
"Ukraine, originally,"
my incredible wife said without pause.
"But I've been in America for 5 years.
The oven woman perfectly recalled the details of the fake identity we had gotten from McElfresh, and the knot in my stomach started to release. But then Amrila came into the living room.
"Oh."
Agent Yoder glanced over at the red-skinned woman, and her eyes grew a little wider.
You must be the roommate."
I watched as Amrila's eyes narrowed at the roommate comment, but she put on a smile that didn't quite reach her eyes as she looked at the agent.
"Yes,"
the half-demon woman said, and her lip curled slightly to reveal her pointed canine teeth.
"Amrila Sidorov."
Then the Zinkari woman deliberately came and sat down on my other side on the couch. I smiled at the agent and tried to think of how I could get her out of here quickly before anything could be said that would raise her suspicions.
"Maybe it would be more expeditious if you all could show me your IDs,"
the agent said as she looked warily at the red-skinned woman. Ipsith looked at me and I nodded, so the ladies grabbed their purses and each handed their new driver's licenses to the stern woman. The agent, to her credit, smiled as she took the plastic ID cards, but then her eyes nearly popped out of her head as she looked down at the photos.
They let you take your photos like this."
Agent Yoder held out the IDs so we could see the pictures. And of course, both Ipsith and Amrila looked just as they always do. I guessed the agent had expected to see the ladies out of what she probably assumed was elaborate makeup. "Yeah," I interjected. "When changes to your appearance are permanent, they just photograph you as you are. Same as if someone dyes their hair blonde."
This is all permanent."
Grace Yoder choked as she indicated both of the women on the couch with me.
"Oh, yes,"
the Zinkari woman said with a sly smile, and she was clearly enjoying the other woman's discomfort.
"We are live-action role-players,"
Ipsith added in a bright tone.
"You know, cosplayers. This is how we always look."
"They're really into it," I added with a grin. "What can I say?"
"That's nice,"
Agent Yoder replied, and it was clear she felt way out of her depth at this point.
Do you have any other identifying papers, just so I can tell the office I did a thorough job?"
"Yeah," I said as I turned to Ipsith. "Baby, would you mind getting the envelope you guys keep everything in?"
"Of course, my love,"
the elven woman said as she stood and headed to the back of the house. The white-haired woman went to get the paperwork, and Amrila, the agent, and I all enjoyed an increasingly awkward moment while we waited for Ipsith to come back.
Would you like more coffee, ma'am?"
I asked just to relieve the tension.
"No, thank you,"
the reserved woman politely replied. Finally, Ipsith came out of the bedroom and handed the papers to the agent. After what felt like hours, but was probably just a few minutes, the agent stood and handed the papers back to the elven woman with a tight smile.
"Everything seems to be in order,"
Yoder said.
"But is there a number I can call you at if I should have any more questions?"
I gave the older woman my cell number and walked her to the door.
"I apologize, Mr. Hill,"
Agent Yoder said as we stepped out on the front porch.
"Normally we would call before conducting a home visit, but there was no information for contacting you in the complaint we received."
"No harm done," I replied in a pleasant tone. "I'm just glad we could get it cleared up." I knew it was Brock who called immigration, and that he likely hadn't given them my name or any contact information, so an agent would have to come to my house. Sure enough, as the agent walked down the porch steps to her car, I looked up and saw Brock, out on his lawn, watching my house. Stanton and I locked eyes from across our yards. And I knew right then this wouldn't have been in response to me hitting his grown son for being in my yard last night. The burly man had set this in motion days or weeks beforehand. I was pissed, but I also knew that if I showed how angry I was, Brock would win. So I plastered a smile on my face as I waved to Agent Yoder. As the agent's car drove out of the cul-de-sac, Amrila and Ipsith came out on the porch too,
and I put my arm around the red-skinned woman's waist as the elf leaned against my shoulder. Then I waved at Brock.
Yard's looking good, buddy!
I called across the cul-de-sac. Stanton's eyes narrowed at me, but he didn't say anything. I turned to go back into the trailer and saw Amrila flip Brock the bird out of the corner of my eye as we walked into the mobile home. The Zinkari woman's throaty laugh echoed off the walls for a moment before I closed the door behind us. The three of us decided to finish up our preparations to go to the Gloom early the next morning, and the rest of the evening was spent with us sitting on the couch, enjoying time as a family, and watching the ladies' favorite show. We ordered out for some pizza and had a couple beers, and all in all, it was another perfect evening with my wives. But 4 in the morning came early the next day. Ibsith rolled out of bed and padded into the kitchen to start the coffee, while Amrila and I started to get dressed and do final checks on our gear. By the time the horned woman was strapped into her armor and I had double and triple checked the Glock and the Galil to make sure everything was in working order, the elven woman had made breakfast for us. Then, once the eggs, bacon, and lots of coffee had us feeling fresh and ready for the long trek ahead of us, Amrila and I headed to the back door. Ibsith followed, kissed me goodbye, and hugged the red-skinned woman tightly. "If you have any trouble," I said to the elven woman as I put my hand on the back door, "don't be afraid to go to the Tynor's place. And you've got the cell, the credit card, and the pistol in the kitchen drawer in case of an emergency."
"How my lover worries over me,"
Ibsith purred as she looked adoringly up at me. "Always, baby." I grinned down at my elven wife. I knew she'd be okay. Ibsith was smart and more capable than her innocent manner let on. But still, I would worry until I got back home. If Amrila and I were successful, though, there would be one less thing to worry about. Once we got the other Night Elf tribes to move against Ursinger, the Mad Chief wouldn't have time to bother us. The horned woman and I headed out of the back door, and we moved quietly toward the lilac bushes so we didn't disturb the neighbors in the eerie silence of the early morning. I had all of my usual gear strapped to me, plus the case of craft beer that I'd gotten for the dwarves, and once we were in the bushes, I unlocked the metal hatch that led to the tunnels and let Amrila go down the ladder first. Once she was at the bottom, I handed down the case of beer and then climbed down the ladder too. Going to see the dwarves before we headed into the Yinni territory again was a little out of the way, but it would be worth it. I hadn't seen them in a couple of weeks, and I wondered what they'd made since I'd given them the bullet reloading machine and a bunch of empty casings. Also, I thought giving them the beer would be a nice way to thank them. The magical bullets they'd made for me had saved my life and the Dolrath territory from the Shadow Demon. It took a little over an hour to get to where the lost dwarves lived in the southern tunnel. The corridors of the old dwarven stronghold were incredible to see, too. They were filled with traps, but the magical ring Sagor had given me protected us. The most impressive space was the old bathhouse, which was tiled in cobalt blue tiles and had an intricate mosaic floor. I wondered if the ancient plumbing still worked. The idea of swimming in a huge tub of hot water was intriguing, to say the least. Eventually, we reached the quarters of the dwarves. They lived in a spacious workroom that had long wooden tables and benches arranged around the room. Countless projects and experiments were laid out on the tables, and I could smell gunpowder in the air.
"Eddie!"
Becklin, the small, red-bearded dwarf, exclaimed as Amrila and I entered the dwarf's living space.
"Amrila, it's wonderful to see ya!"
There was a harumphing sound from one corner, and I turned to see Dorim hunched over a project that he was working on, with his gray beard tucked into his tunic to keep it out of his way. Dorim didn't like the Zinkari woman or me very much. "Hello, Becklin," I said in a loud, friendly manner. "I brought something for you, gentlemen."
"Really?"
the small, red-headed dwarf asked with obvious interest. Becklin hopped off his stool and walked over to me as I took a bottle out of the case, opened it, and handed it to the master craftsman. Then the dwarf took a testing sip of the beverage, and his eyes went wide.
"It's beer?"
the red-headed dwarf said with a note of approval.
"And good beer at that? Sagor, Torik, Eddie's here and he brought beer?"
"Sorry, it's not cold." I grinned as I watched Becklin take another sip.
"Cold?"
the small man asked with a wrinkled brow.
"Why on earth would you drink beer cold? It ruins the flavor."
"If you say so," I said as I playfully raised my hands in surrender.
"You should really try it cold sometime, though,"
the horned woman added.
It really is divine. With human beer, at least. I think they brew it with the intention of serving it cold.
What a strange notion!
Torek boomed as he walked out from behind a partition.
Cold beer? I would be more interested in the process of how one brews a beer that's meant to be drunk when cold.
A wise-sounding voice said from behind the same partition. Then Sagor came out into the work area and came up to greet Amrila and me.
So glad to see you both,
Sagor said as he shook my hand.
Amrila, my dear, you're as lovely as ever.
The horned woman inclined her head to acknowledge the compliment and then handed the old dwarf a beer. I opened one and handed it to Torek, and then I opened a fourth one and looked over my shoulder. Dorim, would you like one too? I asked the grumpy, gray-bearded dwarf. Dorim looked over at us, and I watched the wheels turning in his head. He clearly wanted to try the beer, but that would mean accepting a gift from me.
It would be rude not to take one.
The gray-bearded dwarf finally huffed, and he got off the stool he was sitting on. Dorim came over, took the beer from my hand, and took a sip. Then the gray-bearded dwarf turned on his heels and went back to his workbench without any indication of what he thought of the beverage, but I took the fact that he kept drinking the beer as a sign that he liked it.
I'm glad you came, Eddie,
Sagor said as he took a pull from the bottle Amrila had handed him.
Oh, this is marvelous. Such a wild and exotic flavor.
That's the oranges in it. I snorted as I pointed at the picture of a bisected orange on the label.
Oranges,
Torek nodded.
I like the sharpness of the flavor.
Getting to my point,
the oldest dwarf said as he looked up at me.
We've been working on something we'd like you to test out.
Oh? I replied in an excited tone. I'd hoped they would have something to show me. The bullets they'd given me before had been infused with magical light, and I was eager to see what else they might have made.
I present to you,
Becklin said in a grand tone that was slightly marred by his high tenor voice,
the multi-bullet.
The red-headed dwarf held up a 9mm bullet in a copper-coated case I'd gotten for the dwarves, but the tip of the round had a strange, iridescent sheen to it that changed color in the yellow light of the dwarves' lanterns. It looks cool, I said as I moved the bullet around to admire the rainbow effect. But what do they do?
After the success of the light bullets,
Torek rumbled,
Dorim wondered if it'd be possible to imbue the metal with more than one elemental property.
And I was right,
the gray-bearded dwarf called from his workstation.
He is theoretically right,
Sagor said as he shot a look at Dorim's back.
We'll know more after you have a chance to test them out.
But you should use caution,
Becklin added as he took another drink of his beer.
Because no element is in high concentration, it might take a few bullets to take down a magical creature if they're resistant to your regular bullets.
Okay, I nodded. That makes sense. How many were you able to make?
The process took quite a while,
Sagor said as he collected a drawstring bag off one of the work tables.
But we've prepared 3 dozen so far.
Sagor handed me the bag, which was heavier than it looked. Thank you all so much, I said as I hefted the bag a few times.
Good luck with them,
Becklin said with a grin as he glanced over Dorim's back.
He won't need luck,
the gray-bearded dwarf grumbled loudly.
Unless he misses.
The small red-headed dwarf chuckled, as if that was exactly the response he'd wanted. I'll let you know how they work, I snorted. Thank you again.
Thanks for the beer,
Torek said as he gratefully held up his bottle. Amrila and I said goodbye to the dwarves and turned to leave their living space. But as we passed the work table where Dorim sat by himself, the horned woman smiled mischievously.
Sniveling dwarf.
The red-skinned woman sniped as she passed the gray-haired dwarf.
Damon Strumpet.
Dorim shot back without looking up. But there was an unmistakable note of amusement in the tense dwarf's voice, and I smiled. I suspected maybe he wasn't as hostile to the horned woman and I as he acted, and Amrila had guessed as much too. The Zinkari woman had also figured out how to best interact with Dorim, which I guessed were clever insults. Good to know. After we left the dwarves, Amrila and I retraced our steps back to the northern tunnels, to the iron door that led to the Yinni territory. Now, for our next stop in the gloom.